Good morning, good evening, depending upon what part of the world you're in. I am, we're producing today from New York City, from New York. If it's Friday, you know it's the CEO series where we bring together the most exciting people, leaders, entrepreneurs, authors, innovators from across the globe. And our guest today, longtime friend, family friend, Jennifer Koppelman Hutt, is a multifaceted professional with expertise in spanning law, media, entrepreneurship, and writing. Initially practicing law after graduating from Hofstra University Law School, she quickly pivoted to media. She hosts the show, It's Just Jenny, from on Sirius. And it's now
it's a podcast.
Now it's a podcast.
That's right.
And also runs a consulting business on the side and created a product, which we'll talk about.
Yep.
Oh, awesome. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Thank you for having me.
I was just saying that the last time we spoke was on 42nd Street. That must be 15 years ago.
Yeah. A long time ago.
Mm-hmm. So walk us through, and how did you become Jenny as to where you are today?
Right. So, you're right. I did go to law school and I did pass the bar, and I am licensed and in good standing in the state of New York as a lawyer, but I really didn't love practicing law. I just did little bits of it when my babies were really, really little. My kids are now both young adults. And then in 2005, I went to assist my dad, who you know, his name was Charles Koppelman. At Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia, I went to be his executive assistant. Though I was a lawyer, he needed an executive assistant, and there I was. And while I was working for him, I met my former business partner and co-host on a radio show that was called Whatever with Alexis and Jennifer. And Alexis asked me to do a radio show with her. We did that out of Sirius XM starting in the fall of 2005. And then from there, that show had a few different incarnations of radio and then television. And then in 2012, I went on my own at Sirius XM and launched my Just Jenny show and sort of Just Jenny brand. And then last fall, I left Sirius XM to start my Just Jenny podcast. And that's here I am.
You had a lot of pivots.
Oh, yeah. I've had a lot of pivots. Yes.
So what was the key theme in moving from one to the other? Lots of times people get to a certain point, it's not working. Maybe they need to reflect or readjust.
And yeah, sure.
Need to make the move. How would you advise someone on career pivots?
So when I fell into radio, it was sort of, yes, it was serendipitous and exciting and not at all planned. But I'd always wanted to use my voice. That was kind of my thing. In high school, I would call radio stations just to make a sound bite, not to win any contests, just to somehow get myself on air. And I always had that kind of thing that I wanted to do something with my voice. So when I fell into that, it was really sort of meant to be. And I think I found my home broadcasting more because of the way I could relate to people through an audience and through that kind of back and forth. There's great connection with that audio medium. And so it wasn't a planned pivot. It just kind of felt like I had landed in the right place. And then from there sort of came the birth of the social media and the content creating and the internet and this whole digital life, which I took to like a fish in water. And I mean, I always say that had this been the world when I was in college and law school, I wouldn't have finished a darn thing, Ron, not a single thing. I would have spent my whole time online and my whole time content creating. But from the radio show and sort of the relationships that I made with people, the pivot then to podcasting was pretty seamless because I knew that I could take what I had done on the job for over 17 years in live broadcast and move it into the podcasting realm. And then the other pivot that I had along the way, of course, is that I co-invented my reading glasses, my bunny eyes, which came out of necessity. At 44 years old, my vision changed dramatically and the world became fuzzy. Yeah.
So you've gone through those pivots and then went through the entrepreneurial phase, which is what you're in now.
Yeah.
But that came about as a need because I couldn't very well see.
Yeah.
How do you take it from there? Because lots of people have ideas about,
Sure.
A great idea, and they keep talking about it year over year, and nothing happens.
Yeah. So the first thing, just to go back to what you'd asked me about what's my advice to somebody who has to pivot, I think the advice that I would give and the advice that I'm going to give is you just have to do it. Even if you're uncomfortable, or it feels weird, or you're not quite sure you're making the right move, you just have to try it. Because it's 100% failure rate, you do nothing. And there's a great chance that you'll have some exciting success when you try something. So just take that leap and make that pivot, which back to Bunny Eyes is pretty much what happened. I had a feeling in my belly. It was in, I think, 2017 in the spring. I was getting my hair done and I couldn't wear my reading glasses because I was getting my hair done. I was having color applied and I felt like if my glasses were on, the color wouldn't be on my hair. It would get on the sleeve of the little plastic thing that I put on the temple of the glasses, or it would get on my glasses. And I said to myself, there should be a pair of reading glasses that you could hold in your hand, like opera glasses. And I just said it to myself by myself in my kitchen. But the minute I had that feeling, I felt like in my belly, I was so excited and I became really, really protective of this ridiculous idea, right? Because it was ridiculous at the time, Ron. And I remember telling, I think my son first, and he was like, that's really cool. He didn't really care that much, but he was like, that's really cool. And then about 2 or 3 months later, I was next to my sister at the beauty parlor and I looked at her and she looked frustrated getting her hair colored. And I said, why are you frustrated? And she said, because I can't read. And I was like, wait, what? And then the two of us looked online to see if anybody made what I'd say like this looks like opera glasses, right? From years and years ago. Nobody made them. And I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. There was not a single site that carried anything like it. So my sister knew a friend, an old friend who was in the eyewear business. We connected with her. She was then going to China where she got her first prototype made. And so out of that came Bunny Eyes, which are the first you can wear them. You can flip the temples and hold them in your hand. You could just flip one temple so that when you're lying on your side reading in bed, the temple doesn't dig into the front, into the side of your head. And you could also tilt the front of the frame. So you could make eye contact with an audience while giving a presentation, but then look down and read your notes. So yeah, they're multi-purpose and really cool.
Yeah. Do you think because you grew up in a family of entrepreneurs that it was an easier switch to try something?
I'm not sure. What I think is I grew up in a family with a high execution rate. Okay. So I think that the idea just getting it done is something that I know how to do. So even though I didn't know like step A to B to C to D, I knew I'd find the path to it. And I'd find the help from this woman we partnered with. And I'm a big fan of working in a team. Mm-hmm. So when you find the right team, I think that's when you sort of strike gold. And and I had to make them. I was so excited by the whole idea that I had to do it. And so we did. And that's Bunny Eyes. We named it after our mom.
Wow. That's so cool. So in each one of these pivots, the brand changed somewhat, you know, so you go from the initial broadcast with the two of you, and then you went on your own and you keep pivoting, but the brand keeps expanding. Mm-hmm. Brand management. Mm-hmm. Would that be where that would fall under? Managing that brand?
Yes. So I think the thing that I have always been really good at is just being me. I've never been somebody who could pretend to be different from the who that I am. My dad used to say that I'm like, I don't know, 40% aspirational and 60% like pathetic. Not really. He was kidding. But the point is that I make a lot of mistakes along the way. I have a lot of issues. I'm really transparent about as many of them as I feel comfortable being transparent about. I have a big belief that while one doesn't have to share everything online, what we do share should be honest. And so that's kind of the ethos I live by. And yeah, so it's not brand management as much as it's getting more and more comfortable with knowing who I am. And as new layers of me come up and out, I share those. And so maybe that's in a way brand growth. And I think that it's pretty clear sort of the who that I am, which is why I do the consulting where people are sort of stuck in their own, how they present themselves online. I can kind of see where what they're putting out doesn't really align with who they are.
Well, we just got a note here from Rich Fontaine, who was always was a prior guest on the show. And just to acknowledge the people that Friday listeners is Dr. Johnny Parker, who's based out of Washington, D.C., and my dear friend John Self, who was also a guest on the show. Mm-hmm. Brahim, hello, how are you? So I thank everyone that listens in. So you mentioned consulting. So yeah, you packaged all of that, and maybe there's another venture to say I can work with you to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like to help people. I mean, that's the thing. And sure, it's because sometimes what people do is they want to have a digital presence, or they have a digital presence, but you look at their digital presence and it has nothing to do with who that they are. And so there's almost this disconnect.
I call it brand disconnect.
It's the wildest thing. There was a professor who reached out to me at one point, and he's like, can you just take a look at what I'm doing and tell me what I'm doing wrong or what I'm doing right? And I went to his TikTok, I think it was, and there was nowhere on his TikTok that he was a professor. It was the most confusing thing. And that's what he wanted to be promoting. And I'm like, I'm confused. Is your message that you're a professor at said university, or are you an influencer? Like, who are you? If I don't know when I come to your page, that's an issue.
So the marketing side. So now you're into marketing and it's kind of self-taught in guiding that through.
Yeah.
Do you have some success stories that how you worked with someone and they were able to make the pivot or?
Well, I've definitely helped people with how they have told their story for sure, but I don't give specific names unless they want me to.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that business, how do people reach you? They reach you through your website or?
Sure. So they can always send me a DM on Instagram. I'm at Just Jenny Hutt. They can also email justjennypod@gmail.com, which is how I book guests for the podcast and how I work with consulting clients. And yeah, I'm pretty easy to be found. I'm Just Jenny Hutt on Instagram. I'm Jenny Hutt on TikTok or X. And Threads, Just Jenny Hutt. Mm-hmm.
So all of those pivots, which one of those was the most rewarding if you could choose one?
Oh man.
Really inspirational and say, you know what? I know you had the inspiration for the glasses because that filled the need.
Yeah. I think that initially starting to do a radio show back in 2005 was probably the greatest gift of my life because it taught me just how alike all of us are and just how connected as humans we are. And we don't even know it. You might feel insecure and like you're the only one going through X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But the minute you reach out and tell someone your story, you realize that everybody has a similar story, just different characters and locations and details. But we all have that same human experience and those same emotions. And there's just something beautiful in the power of community. So I'd say that really set my life on a different course. And then Bunny Eyes was very cool because it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. I never invented anything, never an idea like that. And so to do that and to actually see the thing that I thought of turn into an actual product that people could buy is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. I was speaking to someone last week and I was saying that I know more lawyers that are not lawyering anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, accountants who are not accountants anymore. And I think, you know, we go to school, we have these aspirations to do things, and we get there and say, nope, not going to work. Does that training for law?
Well, I think that having a legal education is incredible. I mean, I could see the both sides of every story.
Yeah.
And I know how to protect myself. Now, don't get me wrong. I engage an actual working attorney if I need a lawyer. Okay. But I have insight because this is what I've done and I keep up with it. I like to read. But yeah, so but I don't regret having gone to law school or being licensed, because I can use it and I can read documents.
So do you lawyer on yourself, or do you go outside counsel?
No, I'll read through something, but I will always seek another lawyer's eyes. Just, it's better to be. Plus, my niece is a fantastic attorney. My son is going to be a lawyer. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've read that through one of the posts that I saw. Talk to us about Whateverland.
Oh, my gosh. That book from 4 gazillion years ago. So my ex-co-host and I did write a book called Whateverland, Learning to Live Here. And it was just sort of a guide to life about our own personal experiences and how that might help somebody else with their own lives. I'm a big believer in everybody finding their own path and being okay in their own skin. I don't think anybody should tell anybody else how to live, but I love the idea of seeing how other people live and that inspiring you to sort of find your way, all imperfectly.
I had a conversation earlier in the week, and we were talking about, so many people post-COVID are in jobs today. They're trying to figure out what's next. Mm-hmm. And I think COVID was a reckoning, and it caused people to kind of step back and say, is this what I want to do for X amount of years? Or could I try something else?
Yeah.
And to me, COVID was kind of a igniter. It disrupted organization. It disrupted our lives. Did anything come away from you during that period that maybe an idea or something that you were going to move to beyond?
So COVID was a little too comfortable for me, Ron. I mean, the death and devastation of it was horrifying, but I really like being home. So I used to work a hybrid kind of schedule prior to COVID. So when everybody was just working from their homes, that was kind of something I was already used to. And I leaned into it hard. I loved it. And I still love it, maybe a little too much. So I think that I learned I have to be okay with the discomfort of getting out of the house more than I am. And yeah, so I push myself now to leave because I so enjoy being here.
Mm-hmm. If you had to give a speech to a group of CEOs and they're grappling with the new world of work, the new dynamics, demographics of the workplace.
Yeah.
Maybe the organization is not connecting. What advice would you give them?
So I would give them that in 2023, there has to be flexibility. And organizations have to look at each individual employee and what their state of their lives are. So if it's a mom who needs to be close to her kids, you allow her the flexibility to work a hybrid schedule or to work from home. I could tell you that productivity increases with comfort and ease and decreased anxiety. So I know when I have my things around me and I'm in my space, the space that makes me feel the best, I do the most work. I will have output plus output plus output, as opposed to when my emotional and my psychological space is being filled up with my feeling not all that okay for whatever reason, that compromises my ability to get the job done the way that you want me to get it done. So I think that's what I would say. I would say they really need to look at each employee and figure out what's the right place for them to be and how their schedule can best be managed for the best output that they can then give.
That story connected with me because I was in Saudi Arabia doing some work for a bank maybe 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this discussion. The mortgage processing unit for this bank, when everybody had to go work from home. So the entire organization was working from home.
Yeah.
But the mortgage processing unit, let's say their productivity rate was 8 approvals and 8 processes per day.
Yeah.
When they started working from home by force because of COVID, it shot up almost 50 to 60% of increase in productivity.
I get it. Yeah.
And the head of that unit, big shot EVP, whatever it was, he could not understand it. So he got everyone on a call and he said, I have freedom now. I can leave in the middle of the day to go pick my kid up from school. But I come back and my husband comes in, I can work later into the night. That's and doing all these things. And then when it came time to, okay, bring everybody back, he stood up at the meeting and says, my team will continually work from home because the productivity rate is through here. which means increased revenue, all those kind of things. And he tied it to a business case based on productivity.
Yep. I believe that. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it certainly is for me. I would not do well going to an office every day.
I told a buddy of mine, because I travel all over the world, and I said, you know, I kind of miss the days of driving to Willowbrook Mall, getting on the bus, commuting in, walking across 42nd Street. And
sure.
He says, I think you're glamorizing it too much. He said,
100%.
It was not all of that.
No.
Yeah, well, you're right. You're right. It wasn't all of that. But it's kind of something that you miss, because when next week I got a couple of meetings and I have to go through that again. And it's like, when I leave and get back on the bus, it's like, phew. Okay, that's done.
Right. Right. Look, community is important and seeing people is important. And that's why I'm saying I push myself out of my house because I have to see human beings. Mm-hmm. But I do think that when we feel good in our space, we get more work done.
Yeah. So talk to us about work-life balance, because it sounds like you've pretty much figured it out for you.
Ah, God, I've nothing figured out, Ron. I think work-life balance, like you just said, is really specific person to person. And there's certain things are important to me. I have to find time every day to exercise in order for my head to feel okay. So sometimes that means I exercise in between recordings or in between meetings. Sometimes that's early in the morning. Sometimes it's the end of the day. And I kind of just make my schedule based on whatever else I have going on. So yeah, that's what we're, I don't really have set hours other than typically Fridays are a lighter day. That's it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we were able to get you on.
Yeah.
The scheduling, you know, as it relates to that. What's next? Is there next, or I'm in that comfort zone? Whatever comes up, maybe I will react to it. But for the most part,
I think what's next is I really love the idea of helping people. So any way that I can help somebody figure out their brand or how to manage their lives or how to grow whatever it is that they're doing, I'm all in to do that with them. I love helping people. I've done it on sort of a big way via broadcast and podcast and radio and television, but one-on-one I think was really cool. So yeah, I like helping people. I also like helping people find their way with sort of the body stuff and feeling okay, because I've gone through a lot with that too.
Had a discussion yesterday. I was in Toronto yesterday, and I was an MC for a conference. And one of the questions that came up was, as we talk about this future of work and how we're going to move beyond that. But what I found that organizations are very, very conservative as it relates to social media. Oh, no, we only post jobs on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. We never go to a TikTok. We never do that. But I have friends work at TikTok, and I see some amazing corporate entities that have done amazing work finding the level of talent.
Yeah.
How would you advise an organization who says we have to play the straight and narrow and we can only do X, Y, Z?
Yeah. See, I don't believe in that, Ron. I think, first of all, I think humor and sort of real talk is where it's at. I think people are tired of formality. And I think when you let your guard down a little bit, the magic can happen. And look, when you think about companies that we all sort of know of on social media, you think about Wendy's being crazy on Twitter, now X, and how fun that is. Or whenever there's sort of a day, a newsworthy day, and you sort of see these brands, and often they're food brands, jump out with just sort of this interesting, different dynamic content. It's fun. And it makes you realize there's people behind the keyboard, as opposed to sort of this rule book of you must engage in this certain kind of formal way. I think people are over that. I think I want my accountant and my banker and my doctor to all do great jobs at what their trade is, for sure. But I want to know they're human beings. I want to know that they can laugh when something's funny and they can cry when something's sad.
Yeah. The authentic self.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's flip it over. A group of marketing executives who have been doing things one way for the longest, and they're a little afraid to venture out. In other words, give the flavor of the company. Here's how we have fun. I saw a TikTok video of a company, and they just filmed people that were the kids that were doing cool things. And I asked the person, because I knew the company, and they said, we got a bunch of our young people together, and they said, let's create some content for
this. Love it.
The level above was a little skittish because, oh, what are you going to come up with? But it was so cool engaging that audience.
I think that's the thing. Also, the behind the scenes stuff, I think people really like. I think more of these companies should get into, let's say, everybody has a podcast, right? Like everyone talks about how everybody has a podcast. So if you have a big company and people don't really know the higher ups or from the top down, maybe you add in to the whole mix a 5 minute a week podcast introducing and sort of sharing who each character is within that company to give a little context for who's doing what, when, and where. Yeah. I love that. I love bringing sort of the real talk, the authenticity of the actual people to the consumer.
John Self is an executive search consultant, and he's created an amazing brand. 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here, all fun, two, three times. I mean, all across the landscape.
Yep.
And he just moved right into it and just it just took off.
Yep. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing I think I would do. I would love to work with any company and sort of provide their audio component. Cause I love this stuff. I taught myself how to edit. I taught myself how to post. I taught myself podcasting, just all sort of the back end.
Is that another pivot?
Yeah, I guess it was. Cause I'm really not all that tech savvy, but here I am tech savvy. So yeah. I like to learn, Ron. I like to keep learning.
Okay. So I like that you said that because I always advise HR people and leaders, what are you reading?
Yeah.
What are you reading? What are you listening to? Oh, I'm busy, busy, busy. No. The lifelong journey is about learning.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I'm trying to think what I've read recently that I liked. I did love this one book. Hold on a second. I just read, this is a book called On Our Best Behavior by Elise Lunan. I loved this book. And then I got to talk to her. I have this book on my desk, 100 Ways to Change Your Life by Liz Moody. That's up next. I have stacks and stacks of books, and I also listen to podcasts. I like a lot of that development stuff. Again, more to see how other people are doing it. This helped guide me, but I don't believe there's sort of one guru for everybody to follow. I think there's many guides we can learn from, pick and choose.
I look at it as a more mixing and matching. I may look at a book cover and the cover sounds cool. I get into it, not really, but I'll force myself to still go through it because I'm looking for nuggets.
Yes.
And I'm looking for those nuggets that pile onto the pile of nuggets.
Yes.
And that's kind of the filter.
Yeah. I love that. You take the good and you leave the rest.
Yeah, you leave the rest.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be surprised how many people that are in high positions, they don't do, I'm going to say lifelong learning. No self-development. It's just always focused on 100%. And I can't, in a lot of cases, get them to realize you could become a lot more effective if you would expand your horizon.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, again, I like to learn. That's just, I think it's neat. I'm curious. I think it's neat when new stuff gets in there.
Okay. You mentioned curiosity, which is cool. This is a cool word, which is mentioned today. Cool. Curiosity, being authentic, all of these kinds of new approaches to leadership development. Mm-hmm. If you had to, I'm going to put you in another spot again.
Okay,
if you had to design a leadership development program for, you know, the so-called C-suite, we're the C-suite, the way we do things. What would be the moment to stop it?
So I have actually thought about this, even though you are stumping me left and right today, Ron. I think this idea of being okay with who you are and with people in the C-suite being open about their stuff, there is something really humanizing and really fosters the idea of community when people are honest that their journey is not without struggle, that their journey is not without pain. I think that there's comfort in knowing that we're not alone with the stuff that keeps us up all night. And it's not that somebody has to divulge every little thing that's going on in their world, but just that, you know, today it was hard to get out of bed, but I got to the office anyway. Just that level of honesty, I think, changes a dynamic and makes people feel okay.
Yeah. I always said if ceilings can talk, could talk. Yeah. You know, laying to bed, 1,001 things are going through. But that flips it back to the so-called iceberg theory because people see you here, And that's all they see. They don't see the sleepless nights. How am I going to get this to work?
Oh my gosh. Ron, they're asleep. 2 nights ago, I didn't sleep. Yesterday, I don't know how I got through the day. Two recordings, a lot of time on my couch. There were definitely tears. It's life. Who has an easy road? Nobody. Everybody has something they're navigating, speed bumps and craters and whatever else. It's hard to be human.
Yeah. But do you think social media is in a lot of cases could be having a detrimental effect? Because you mentioned influences. People see this, you know, specifically young kids that are impressionable, mm-hmm. and they see this, they want to do this, their lives are not in order.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or where they would want it to be, and they struggle.
Mm-hmm. So yes, I think social media is a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
There are days that even being someone who knows how much of it is a highlight reel and everything is glossy, there's no even playing field because nobody's just showing up. Even knowing all that, I can still be triggered by something I see like, oh, look at them. They are living a perfect life. They don't ever get sad. Okay. But like that feeling, it tricks you. There's this moment where your brain, a switch flips and you get a little bit confused. But I think that we get to choose the content we consume. I'm a big fan of the mute button. If I'm being triggered by something, that's not the fault of the person posting it.
Yeah.
It's my fault for consuming it.
Exactly.
So I think that the key is to own your role in social media. You don't have to look at it. You choose to look at it. So turn away from the things that make you not feel so good. That's number one. And then number two, for young people that see someone else accomplishing what they think they want to do, the trick is, like we said before, you just have to start doing. It doesn't mean you're going to have success right away, or maybe never. But the act of doing anything on a regular basis will get you into doing the next thing on a regular basis. And eventually something will hit in the right way for you. And it might not look like the thing you thought it was going to look like, but that's okay.
And then it may come to a point. There's a roadblock and you pivot and all of a sudden it drives something in a totally different realm.
Yep.
You know, doing that. I had an enlightening moment last night because I finished work at 4 o'clock with this conference and I had to get to the airport, Pearson Airport in Toronto. And I'm getting there. And normally when I'm in the international space, I always fly business class because the clients will pay for that.
Sure.
So this time I was in the back of the plane.
Yeah.
And I'm getting there and I'm really getting upset because the space up top is finally, I said, you know, stop it. A lot of people here, this is their mode of transportation.
Right.
And you're such some so-called big shot that you're saying, get over yourself. And sometimes I'll have those reflective moments and it's kind of like, I've got to do this to me.
Yes, of course. It's a wake up call. You're like, wait a minute. What? Yeah. Yeah. I like those moments.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah. So I had a situation a couple of weeks back. I was in an airport before COVID, and a young lady was trying to fly out of the country. She had a low-level job, and the gentleman who was the agent was just pestering her because she was overweight limit, for the luggage.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very rude, and it really triggered me. You know, kindness. And I walked over to him and I said, why are you being so rude? Well, this is the rules and regulations. I said, well, you know what we're going to do? Give me the ticket. I'll pay for it.
That's
because
so nice.
There's no need of doing this. And I did this
for her,
took over there, and she's bawling in the airport. And I'm hoping that the police will see me and say, I'm helping her. I'm not causing this.
Of course. Hello. Yeah.
So I go there and I pay for it. And she was able to fly. We hugged and then I left. Oh. I got an email from her two weeks ago. And she says, I thought of you. I always think of you.
Oh.
That piece you did. And I'm reading this and I've got tears forming.
Of course.
And I said, that was one incident. So I say that to say, kindness. We've used a lot of words that could connect. Kindness, connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's struggling with something.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not see it, mm-hmm. but everybody's struggling with something. And mm-hmm. a little act of kindness can go a long way.
So true. So true. Yeah. That's whenever someone's sort of unkind in a customer care kind of position. It's never really about you. Just like when we're unkind. I mean, I've had moments where I've called an airline or I've called a company and I've gotten someone on the phone, and I feel like their very intention is just to frustrate me. And then I have to take a step back and I'm like, wait, they're just trying to do their job with their limitations, what they have to follow. And I'm getting all upset because of my own stuff. So you have to kind of take a step back and realize that, yeah, it works both ways.
Yeah. Are you doing any speaking to at conferences?
I want to, Ron. I'm not, but I'd love to. So if any of your followers or viewers or listeners want to hook me up or want to hire me for anything, I am game.
Yeah, because you have a good story, specifically with the pivots and what you've learned from that and packaging that into a product, which is what you did in talking me through this, because I didn't know that side of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that possibly could be the next pivot.
That'd be great. Awesome. I love that idea. My kids are out of the house. I'll go anywhere.
So if you look out into the future, 3, 4, 5 years out, what do you see Jenny at that time?
Oh gosh, Ron, I think I'm the type of person that wants to be working as long as I possibly can. Okay. I don't view the idea of retirement as something I'm looking toward. I am 53 years old. I'm not afraid to say my age. And I want to keep going. I like being engaged in life.
Yeah, I have buddies of mine who basically hung up the curtain.
Yeah.
And but I enjoy what I do.
I know. You're good at what you do.
And I keep doing that. And there is no way I'd ever say I'm going to stop it. I'm just going to play golf. I'm going to do X, Y, Z. To me, that's not fun. So I say that to say each person has got to figure out their own path.
Of course.
Yeah. And guiding that through.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's no wrong way. You just get to, again, do what's right for you. I think people have to realize that. I think you have to sort of look inside and see what you want and then take that path.
Mm-hmm. What is the biggest theme that you notice when you're coaching your clients in social media? And they could be professors, they could be senior executives. Is there a theme that kind of goes through, or maybe they're just afraid, or?
I think you hit it. I think that's it. I think that people are afraid to show who they are. There's something about vulnerability that when we are vulnerable, we think we're open to attack. And so it's scary to put ourselves out there. But again, I think that's where the beauty happens. I think open and honest discourse is what people crave and need, and makes us feel connected. So yeah, that's always where I guide people to be honest in what they share.
So what kind of, if I came to you and I have this blockage.
Yeah.
What are some key tenets that you try and get me to understand that expose myself?
So I think I'd have you tell a story where you were stuck, where you were at a crossroads, where you weren't sure that you were going to end up in this business the way you've created it. You know, what you've built, Ron, is unusual. To go from working corporate to then doing the way you've done it, sort of your own brand of freelance contracts and being flown all over the place and having this life that you want. You got here now today, but along the way, you had to have moments of doubt. And you had to have moments beyond doubt, moments of failure, moments
of doubt.
Right. And so I think having you talk about that and how you were able to work through it, because that's really what separates people who accomplish in a way from people sometimes who don't. You were not willing to give up because something didn't turn out the way you wanted it to. It's like the idea of the weeble. Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. Like, you just keep going. And I think sharing your vulnerabilities is the most important thing you can do.
Yeah. The question I ask people when they say, oh my God, the so-called life you live, they have no idea what goes along with that.
Oh my God, please.
They have no idea. But I said, if you received an email from a firm, that was, say, located in Saudi Arabia, and they said, we want you to come over as a chief human resource officer.
Yeah.
Would you go through the process to do that? And there's always a pause, because that was a step I took. So my mother's favorite phrase was, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step. And I never forgot that. I said, you know what? I'll try it. It's not the end of the world. If it doesn't work, I can come back.
Yeah. Yeah. How exciting. How exciting to take that leap.
And when I got there, it didn't work.
Sure.
Because I was sold a bill of goods and it wasn't that. So I said, okay, so what do I do now?
That's right.
I can always go back, because when you come in as an expat, you've got a contract that's tied to that company and you're there for that 1 year. And I put feelers out and I said, you know what? I'll give it another shot before I leave. Put feelers out. And then there was a CEO's role that someone contacted me for. I think you'd be perfect for that. Did that interview and it got that job, moved to Dubai. That didn't work out because for a whole host of reasons, interaction with the board or whatever it was. And then I said, you know what? Another pivot. I'll give it 1 year, one more year, and then I'll exit. And I got a license, started working, did not stop until COVID.
See, that's the thing. People give up too quickly. Yeah. People hear no, and they're like, okay, I quit. No. You just have to keep going. Just go to the next thing. Yeah. No, none of us are right for every role. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's like a character defect if it doesn't work out at a company or with a brand. It just means that you weren't the right fit for that specific thing. Yeah. Find the place where you're the right fit.
I get a lot of notes from people who are struggling in jobs, senior executives. The connection is not there.
Yeah.
It's not meshing well.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out, what else can I do? I said, at a certain point in time, you're going to have to make a decision. Either I stay here and continue with that, because they're probably not going to change if that's the culture, or you're going to have to make a decision to do whatever you're going to do, whatever.
Right. Right. I think that's good advice. I also think asking for help, talking to trusted friends who are in different businesses or even in the same business, and going over your strengths and going over what you think you're good at and what they think you'd be good at. Sometimes it's really helpful to have another person's perception of what your strengths are.
Yeah, yeah. But again, when people reach out to us, I know a lot of friends of mine that are in high places, they get requests on LinkedIn, can I have a discussion? They're so rude, they won't even respond to it. Because of what I've gone through, I've become more empathetic to what people go through.
Same.
And anytime anyone reaches out to me, I'm going to take 5 minutes respond in a kind way.
Yeah, I live that kind of life too. Yeah. I try to say yes to everybody. Yeah. The only time I don't is if someone's mean or demanding I'm a stickler for things like a please, like don't throw at me the demand that I have to talk to you, because then I don't. But if you approach me the right way, then sure.
Okay, cool. You know, this show came about during COVID because there was no work and Dubai had basically closed down, and Dae and I were trying to figure out what could we do beyond that. So it started as a writing exercise, and then we posted it on the website. And then we said, let's try this. And I said, oh my God, I could never do live. I can talk, but I can't do live because I feel the camera. And we just tried it and it grew into it. It grew into a brand.
It's the best.
The best.
Yeah.
So one of the goals of the show is as we begin to close out, is a creative platform for engaging leaders like yourself to talk through these journeys, because there's so many people out here that are struggling. And I want to thank you Dae for coming in.
Thank you.
You brought the A game. You gave us the master class as to how this is done. Do you have any takeaways from our session today?
Well, I just think that you're amazing, actually. I love your story, and I love that you too have had so many different sort of turns in creating your brand and your life and your business. And I think the takeaway is to keep going for anybody watching.
Yeah.
There's no end game, really. It's just to live your life, right? So a day at a time, that's what you get to do. And if you don't like your current situation, then take the time to explore and find another.
Try and figure it out in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For your time this morning and the rescheduling situation we had.
Oh, sorry about that. You know,
Sorry
about that. I had to do something with my family. So
So this was cool. So thank you. And
thank
tell
you.
The family and all your brother, mm-hmm. I said hello.
I will. Thank you.
For a little background here, we had Jennifer's father on last year, a couple of years back, Charles Koppelman.
Yeah.
Industry legend, the music business, who was always helpful to me in my career. Whenever I needed him, I could send a note. And within an hour, he was responding right away. Let me know what I need to do. And I said, yes.
That's
and I kind of lived that life myself. So thank you so much. And tell everybody I said, hey.
Thank you. And thanks for having me. Take care. Bye, Ade, as okay. well. Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.